Hello and welcome to the GAK.co.uk Guitar Shop Podcast. I am your host Mark Packham, who is with me this evening.
Hello, my name's Matt and I'm the manager in store.
And I'm Joe and I'm here for all your bass related queries.
Hello, my name's Peredur Ap Gwynedd and I play guitar in Pendulum.
Yes, joined by a special guest this evening. Perry has come down to talk in store tonight, but also joining us on the podcast, which is great for
yeah,
us. I think we're going to
get upgraded, Jay.
Yeah. It's like we've got,
this is a big upgrade. Jay can't even play guitar.
Well, yeah, basically.
You can call me Jay if you want. Does that help in any way?
Far too good looking to you know. Yeah, so you're down here with PV tonight talking. I guess a bit about auto-tune guitars.
Yeah.
And also talking to the guys from BIM, who are the music college local to us, I'm sure people have heard of. I thought we could just spend the first bit of the podcast kind of talking about you and, you know, your career and how you've got into doing what you do now, which I guess you'll cover again later on tonight when you talk to the students. Yeah.
So you can just repeat yourself.
This is good practice.
This will be a nice condensed version for people listening online.
I might not have to look at my notes later if I do this now.
So how did you get started with guitar, really? When we've had guests in before, we'd kind of like to ask them how they got into this and how that's led them to where they are.
Well, I come from a musical household anyway. My parents played guitar.
Okay.
So there was always acoustic guitars hanging around the house. My mum had a nylon string, my dad had a steel string, and there was a zither banjo as well at home. So I just picked one of those up, you know, once in a while. My mum taught me the D chord to start off with. I learned how to play.
That's a good one to start with.
Mull of Kintyre was the first tune I
learned. There you go.
Christmas 1977.
Something like that. Yeah. So, my mum taught me Mull of Kintyre, and that was it then. I think I was about 9 years old when she taught me that. Then got my first electric guitar when I was 13. It was a Strat copy, Sunburst.
Okay.
It was a three-tone Sunburst with a maple neck, which is a bit wrong.
Yeah, it's not particularly... No. It's kind of 60s, 50s crossover.
Cheap copies.
Whatever they can get, probably, on those sort of things. Yeah. You know, how did that progress? Did you start out doing bands, or...?
Yeah, well... In my area, we had a rock school every year.
Okay.
So when I was 13, I had this electric guitar and a practice amp, and I went to the rock school, and there was quite a few of the older musicians in the area teaching us how to play and how to play in a band. So it's through that, really. And we started a band back then, a bunch of us, about five of us. And the rest is history.
I sort of always wonder, you know, like from working in here, like how many kids, like we serve, like young kids, and you sell them their first guitar.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. I wonder if, you know, in 30 years' time, you know, we'll actually ever see any of them, you know. I hope they all like keep playing guitar, but will anyone kind of progress to that kind of super level of
Well, I guess that's what we're going to be talking about tonight on the podcast, and certainly more on the night, is making that step to being a working musician someone who just picks up a guitar and is playing in bands.
Well, I didn't do much work when I was in school.
Okay.
I did my A-levels, but I didn't do much work. But I did used to spend about 8 hours a day practicing, so that's one of the ways you start. It's just head down and practice. And that's all I was interested in when I was in school, anyway, was playing guitar. Yeah. Wasn't interested in anything else apart from playing guitar.
How did you make the transition into doing the more kind of session-style work rather than just, you know, having your originals band or having a covers band?
Well, nearly every band that I was in when I was in school was original. There's heavy metal, there's a folk rock band, but it was all originals. I haven't played that many covers in cover bands. You know, one or two odd gigs when I was younger, but not that many. But I used to do, because there's quite a few bands in the area, and people used to ask me if we'd come along and play on this record. So even before I was 16 years old, I'd played on quite a few records.
Oh, wow.
In the Welsh language, you know, just in Wales. You know.
Okay.
But so I'd had a lot of studio experience by the time I was 16. My first recording, my first release was when I was 13. So,
wow.
Yeah, a few months after I started playing in my band.
What was the record?
can't remember the name. I don't think it's available. It was on vinyl, remember that?
Right.
And cassette.
Cassette.
How did that feel when you got that? I assume you had a copy of it at some point.
I just think I wore that record out.
Really? Listening to your own guitar playing.
And he even had a Widley tapping solo in it.
What sort of stuff was it? Was it kind of metal-y?
Yeah, metal.
Yeah. It's the only type of music, really, I was into.
Was there a big Welsh metal scene at the time?
Still is, but in the provinces, you know. That's all there is.
There's no other music.
No, it's just heavy metal, that's it.
Folk for the oldies and metal for the kids.
Yeah. It's still like that now.
And for people who are not so familiar with the stuff that you've done, I wondered if you could just give us a bit of an overview of what you've done session-wise and things that people might have heard you on pre-Pendulum.
Yeah, well, when I came to uni when I was 18, went to London to Goldsmiths College, and I did a degree in music. So, and through that, I was in various bands going through university and doing all sorts of different things. I got into the fusion thing a little bit.
Dangerous.
Yeah, I stopped that really sharp. God.
Break out your Alan Holdsworth tab book and be like, but just stretch that cord there.
I did that for about a year and a half and then I bored myself. And then after leaving university, the first band that I did toured with was Beats International.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, I was going to say, local boys.
Yeah. And yeah, so I joined the tour for the second album, and then worked with Norman for on another project called Freak Power as well. Did some of that. Well, I wrote the first album. So,
right.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. I mean, is there anyone else that you think that you've worked with who might be quite prominent that people might?
Oh yeah, I remember that. After I did a bunch of sessions then and played with various people, did a lot of TV music, wrote a lot of television, and MD'd a lot of house bands for television. But then in about 2007, I got called in to do Natalie Imbruglia.
Okay.
So I was with her for 9 years. Guitar, then guitar and musical director as well.
Okay.
So that
includes some writing, or is that?
No, it wasn't any writing involved in that. It was just playing, basically. Right. Yeah. So touring and albums then.
Did you find that sort of like after you sort of got one session, it's sort of like your name starts to sort of travel through certain circles?
Yeah, it's through producers, really. You know, but I did concentrate mostly on live work, which I prefer doing anyway. I prefer being in front of an audience rather than being in the studio. But I've basically been on tour for the last 20 years. Although I've appeared on some records, but touring is the main thing. Really.
It's interesting to hear you say that you were doing things like MDing.
Yeah.
Is that something that you're going to be maybe covering when you talk to the students tonight? Do you think it's important to diversify rather than
just
be a guitar player?
Yeah. Every musician should really know how to direct a band, because it gives you a level of confidence and maturity that you don't usually have. So, I'd recommend everybody do it, you know, if you can, because it's a big help, you know.
Yeah. What skills do you think people need to be able to do that?
Was that skills or scales?
it was skills.
Major scales.
All the big ones.
All the major scales.
That's just pentatonic.
Yeah, yeah.
Blue
that's
scale.
Fine.
That's
done.
It. That's all you need. Skills. You need people skills, really. You need to be able to speak to somebody and not talk down to somebody, be on the same level of them, and just help them along, really, and have a lot of good ideas in your head.
Yeah.
That's it, you know.
So, up to the present day, how did you get involved with Pendulum?
Well, I was doing a lot of sessions for DJ Fresh.
Okay.
So he had a band, a drum bass band called Bad Company, Digital Nation, about 12 years ago, and I played a lot of that. So that's kind of where the heavy drum and bass, like heavy guitar with drum and bass thing started, was with DJ Fresh when I played on his stuff. So his label is called Breakbeat Chaos. So,
right.
Pendulum was signed to Breakbeat Chaos in 2002, I think, in the first initial releases. was released on that. And then Rob from the band, main guy, the lead singer and producer and writer, said, asked DJ Fresh, I want a guitar on this album. And Dan
stole you away.
Yeah, and Dan would, well, get Perrier.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was all make a dance anyway. And yeah, so that's what it was. I came in to play on the first album.
Interesting point that you raised, and kind of one of the questions that I wanted to ask really is,
yeah,
for people who are perhaps not so familiar with the Pendulum stuff, yeah, and also kind of drum and bass in general, how does guitar fit into that?
It fits in quite well, actually. It's more my parts when I'm on stage, it's more like I'm playing in an extreme metal band, you know,
right,
a lot of
it's a lot of rhythm, I suppose.
Yeah, a lot
it?
Of chunky rhythms, stuff like that.
From my slightly limited knowledge of drum and bass, yeah, stuff, I suppose it shares a kind of aggression. That,
yeah, and the speed.
Yeah.
You know, with a lot of extreme metal. You know,
yeah.
Well, a lot of drum and bass is written at 174 beats per minute, you know, which is kind of insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tempo-ish. Yeah. But playing guitar is mainly just rhythm and heavy metal.
It's funny, really, because I think, like, especially, say, on, like, YouTube, and you see a lot of guitarists who are kind of moving into more of that heavy electronic style,
yeah,
thing. It's, like, a style that's just kind of, like, totally evolved, really.
Yeah.
Out of, I suppose, metal. But, yeah, you see so many bands doing, like, electronica or dubstep or drum and bass covers, like,
that's
on
right,
guitar.
Yeah. There's quite a few of them on YouTube I've seen. Some of them pretty damn good as well.
I guess they both also share, as well as the kind of speed, it's that kind of technical aspect as well. Is, you know, if you're making electronic music with a guitar, generally your playing is going to be quite high. You know,
yeah.
The level of playing is going to be quite high, which obviously, you know, translates somewhat into metal.
I mean, you with the whole Korn and Skrillex thing, you know, that's, you know, it fits so good, you know, so well. It's all those noises that Sonny makes, and with the heavy guitars, of course, and the vocals, and it does work.
Yeah. Well, he came out of a kind of sort of a heavy.
Yeah, he was.
I'm not familiar with his previous band, but I know that he was doing something that was more guitar focused.
Yeah, I think it was a metal band.
Kind of like heavy.
From first to last.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, there we go. From first to last. I'm not familiar with them. What are they?
I've only heard limited. There was a little bit. I think I was more into Korn. I think they were a little bit after that.
Right.
So I think they were kind of like the second wave on from nu metal to more emo. Oh god, I'm going to get shot on Twitter for that sort of thing, aren't I?
E-word.
But yeah, and in fact, yeah, if you listen to that Korn Skrillex record, it's almost like Korn could have made that record 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's the same sort of, it's almost the same sort of vibe. It's just kind
this
weird mishmash of electronica has almost gone to almost an extreme guitar style, almost.
Well, I think Sonny was a fan of theirs anyway, so I think when he got the chance to do that, he was like,
you know.
It's the same with us. We did a song with In Flames on the last album, you know, and it's a metal song. It's 174 beats per minute, but it is metal.
Yeah.
You know?
Did you have to bring out any particular guitar techniques or anything for that? Did you have to perhaps go back to a different style, or
it was Bjorn did a lot of the rhythm pan. I did a lot of the I was doing twin lead on that.
Right.
Because they're pretty full on.
Yeah.
In Flames, they're like pretty damn full on in that kind of sort of metal thing.
Yeah. Now, you know, it is a metal song. If you listen back to it, there's not much electronics. Well, there is electronic stuff, but it just fits in so well.
It's more kind of layering.
There's a lot of guitar in it. I'm not sure how many tracks I did, and I know Bjorn put a hell of a lot of guitar in it. It's really cool.
But you could, drums translate quite well, I suppose, like the metal things. You could have that metal guitar, but you could, because it's like you say, a similar BPM, just putting a drum and bass beat on the same thing.
Well, all the drums are light on the album anyway, because especially that, you know, KJ Sokoro, drummer, you know, he's a demon with a double kick. You know, he's an absolute demon.
Does he come from a metal background as well?
Yeah. We're both massive Rush fans as well. Huge Rush fans. We were playing Ibiza Rocks one year. And in Ibiza, Ibiza Rocks put you up in a villa. The band stays in a villa and the crew stay in a hotel. So we were in this villa out in the middle of nowhere in the Ibizan hills. And it was a really posh sound system with speakers outside. Right. So we were there. It must have been about midnight. There's only three of us. There's me, KJ, the drummer, and Ben, our MC. Ben doesn't know anything about Rush, so me and KJ decided to teach him. We just played him Rush all night. You know, it was brilliant. Beers by the pool up in Ibiza, listen to Rush albums. It's fantastic.
In terms of people's education on Rush, that's probably like the weirdest place anyone's ever come to terms of the pure power of the ultimate power trio.
One
thing I was going to point out, like, because obviously you say like you play things like Ibiza Rocks now. I've been to Ibiza and it's a like you go to like a nightclub there. It's so different to say going to a gig here. So how do you find like the gigs vary, like playing guitar on a place that's kind of mainly there for people, mainly there for maybe like electronica, and then you come here and you play somewhere like the Bryan Centre and it's maybe a little bit more rock orientated or something.
Well, in Ibiza, and I was gone towards the rock thing big time, I think, what with Ibiza Rocks.
Yeah,
you know, there's a lot of indie bands and alternative bands playing there, so I don't think it matters so much anymore. You don't have to be techno, you don't have to be house or whatever, you know, electro.
Just crowds are the same sort of thing.
We're a big crossover band anyway, you know, because we play metal festivals.
Yeah, you played Download.
Yeah, we played Download, Sonosphere. It's an interesting fact for you. We were the first ever band to play Sonosphere.
Yeah. Really?
The first ever Sonosphere, we were the first band on.
Wow.
Yeah, in Holland, in a place called Nijmegen, which is where Van Halen's from.
Yeah.
We're born
in the home of rock.
Yeah. So the first ever Sonosphere was in Nijmegen, and Metallica were headlining. Who else was playing? Slipknot were playing. And we were the first band on. So.
The birth of Sonosphere.
So we've done Sonosphere. We've done a bunch of metal festivals in Europe, but we also do all the dance festivals as well, and all the pop festivals like V Festival, and the more mainstream ones like Reading and even Glastonbury. You know, so it's a total crossover. You know, some bands they only do the rock festivals, or they only do the dance electronic. Yeah. But you know, we're lucky that way that crosses over and everybody seems to like it, which is really good.
Well, you win.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's good time music, you know. You have to jump up and down to it, you know.
It's kind of fast, it's loud, it's got thrashy guitars for the rock guys, huge beats for people who are into that sort of thing.
I mean, and I remember looking in the audience, we were playing in Blackpool, I can't remember the name of the venue, the big venue in Blackpool, about 4 or 5 years ago. And in the front,
Winter Gardens, is that the one?
Yeah, that's the one. And it's about a 4,000 capacity venue, and there's a lot of ravers and rockers there. But in the front row, there's a family, and there's three generations.
Oh, no.
There's like a 10-year-old kid, and his dad, and the grandmother. It was a family. It was like, wow, that's really cool.
I hope your grandma bought the tickets and then dragged the other tickets.
Come check out this new band that I really like.
It's a big crossover audience, and everybody seems to like it, which is good. Yeah.
So we've been talking about how you kind of use guitars in perhaps a genre that isn't particularly known for it. I think we should probably talk about guitars.
Yes.
And talk about gear, which is, you know, kind of what we do every
My
week.
Favorite
but,
subject.
Well, exactly.
Well, you saw me earlier when I was walking, when you asked, do you want a tour of the shop? I went, yeah, please.
Yeah.
I'm still being a kid, you know. Remember when you were a kid going to the music club, Stratocaster, Fender. Still like that to this day.
Well, it's weird, you know, all of us spend a lot of time around guitars. And even when I'm away from the shop for a bit and I come back, you kind of go, that telly looks amazing.
It's called GAS.
Guitar
gear acquisition
syndrome. I have that.
I have GAS.
So let's talk about what you're currently using at the moment. I mean, you're here tonight talking about the PV-AT200 auto-tune guitars. Let's talk about those for a bit, really, because I think a lot of people, it may either be unfamiliar with what they are or perhaps confused by the fact that it's an auto-tune guitar. But they don't work in the same sense as like the Gibson stuff, where you've got mechanical tuners on the headstock.
This is totally digital.
So what's your experience of them? How did you get involved with PV and using these guitars?
Well, I've been endorsed by PV for about 5 years now. My main guitar when I play live is the HP Special. It's just something that I played one once and I spoke to people who fancy doing a deal, and they went, yeah. And I've got four of those now. Okay. And they're just perfect for the band.
Those are the American made.
Yeah.
Because I know they've done the HP stuff over a range over the past few years. Has been down to the Korean and Chinese stuff.
That's right. No, I've got the four of the American ones, two of the normal standard ones, and I've got two custom shop with the Graphtech Floyd Rose Trem with the piezo pickup in it.
Okay.
So I can get acoustic sounds and I still dive bomb basically.
Still maintain the metal.
Oh yes.
That's what you want. You want those kind of Vi-esque dive bombs but with an acoustic acoustic vibe.
So basically with the band I wanted a guitar that did everything, so I didn't have to keep swapping stuff all the time, and so I just wanted the one guitar. Bless you. I just wanted the one guitar that could do everything, but then again we play in different tunings, so I still got a swap, so it didn't quite work. But then I was speaking to Andy Russ from PV, and he said something that you might be interested in. So he said it's an auto-tune guitar, and I went, what? It's an auto-tune guitar. And then I read up a bit on it and saw a YouTube clip. I went, wow, that's amazing. So that's what it does. It's not like your T-Pain auto-tune.
No, it's auto-tune. It's not like the software auto-tune. Yeah. It doesn't work.
That's where it tunes each string individually, basically. Yeah. So your guitar could be totally out of tune. You press the volume knob down and it goes, and it digitally manipulates the strings through its brain into a standard tuning.
So the pickups are essentially reading the pitch of the string and
The pickups in the bridge. It's a piezo setup.
So, and there's one, it's like a hex pickup, there's one for each saddle.
That's right.
So they're basically reading the pitch of the string and then converting that to a standard pitch for that string.
Yeah.
But as well as doing standard tuning and obviously being very easy to get in tune, there's some kind of clever detuning bits you can do as well.
It's got a thing called fret control, which you can program it. It's quite easy to do. I won't go into it now. It's a bit difficult to describe on the podcast without having the guitar and without anybody being able to see it.
Yeah. But this is what we do every week. Talk about the sound of a pedal.
Yeah, it's a thing called fret control. It'll be on YouTube. Check it out. So basically, using the frets and using the top E string, you can have presets. So you can go, the preset that I've got at the moment, I've got, it goes down a half step, E flat to E flat, then another step, a half step to D, a D to D, standard tuning, and then I've got a drop B flat tuning, which is what the Self vs. Song, Self vs. Self, the In Flames song, that's what that tuning is,
right.
Drop B flat, silly. But, and it sounds great. And you don't get the floppy strings. So it's still got the same tension in the strings.
Advantage.
And so it digitally manipulates the pitch of the guitar down, and so it sounds pretty damn good. You know? So, and you can get alternative tunings like Dadgad, Open G, Open A, Open E. You know, it's unlimited, really.
Yeah. When they first came out, I don't think they had that, did they? Because we worked out a way that you could put it in baritone by fretting all the strings at the 7th fret and then tuning it. And because it works, obviously it thinks, everything's... It's all in B, so I need to tune it all to B. So then, when you're in open, it felt like it was in baritone, which is just brilliant. When we worked out,
it was kind of almost like hacking them, wasn't it?
You
can do that.
Yeah,
and, you know, I don't know if you're supposed to be able to do this, but you can.
But the really cool thing about the guitar is, it's a great songwriting tool because when you do press the tuning, it does tune it to standard tuning, so you can fret any string you want and get some new tuning. I've got a tuning that I've never even heard before, and I was just playing about a year ago when I first got the guitar. I was listening, I recorded myself doing it, and I was playing this thing that I just came up with, and after 30 seconds in I stopped the recording and go, wow. This is amazing. And I start again.
Could you remember what you'd set the tuning up as though?
I listened to it last night and I tried it and I've gotten it. I've forgotten, and I will get it. I kind of know what it is, but I've yet to nail it. Yeah, but it's a great songwriting tool, you know, to get odd sounds and different tunings. You know.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I've had limited time with them. We played with them quite a bit when they first came in, but since then, you know, played a million other guitars in the meantime.
Yeah.
But actually, it just sat for sort of 5-10 minutes earlier, just playing with them. And like you say, it's just a really easy way to get a bit of weirdness. And for, you know, we talk about weird pedals and weird amps. It's not often that you see a guitar that there is that kind of instant, like, I can do something really different on this.
I mean, another thing with it as well, you've got a virtual capo, so so you can basically have, you can play, I think, up to an octave up. So you're playing in normal position down near the nut, but it sounds an octave up.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
We were talking briefly earlier about kind of like Nashville tuning and stuff like that.
So yeah, you can do that with it. But all at a press of a button.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant. So yeah, I've used it in a bunch of sessions over the last few months as well. You know, it's just so handy.
Worth mentioning that it's all, you can bypass everything as well. There's a couple of humbuckers in there. Yeah.
And they're pretty good sounding humbuckers as well. Now. They're really powerful and great for rock.
Yeah.
But then with the... when you go back to the autotune, it also does modelling. So you've got standard one is twin humbuckers, then you've got an acoustic sound in it, you've got P90s, you've got Telecaster, you've got a Strat, you've got a baritone, there's a bass in there as well. So always different modelling types of guitars. At the switch of a button.
I think it's one of those things. I remember when I was talking to the guys from PV, and they were saying that, you know, almost we don't know the potential we could almost do, you know, further down the line. Like, you could get one now, and you go, cool, it's got this capo thing.
Yeah.
But then a year later, they might update it and go, oh, you can do all this as well. Yeah, and it's like,
add sitars on it and things like that.
I mean, that's the amazing thing about it.
Well, yeah, because you can update it. If there's new firmware, you just.
Just bosh it on there.
Because is there a MIDI? I can't remember. Is there a MIDI output or is there a MIDI breakout
input?
Yeah,
there's a break. I think there's a breakout box, but you can just use a normal MIDI interface. And do it through any DAW, I think.
It's probably the cheapest way to do MIDI guitar.
Yeah.
Now I would have thought, because it's, I can't think of any other guitar that comes in at that price that's got individual, you know, like a hex pickup. Under the bridge.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I think, you know, it's a really good alternative to, say, something like one of the Roland ones or one of the Fender ones, you know.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, a little bit cheaper.
Yeah, I think we do, what are we doing about now? 299, something like that? Which is like no money at all.
No. It's brilliant. I just love it. It's such a handy thing.
Yeah.
It's a handy tool.
I'm quite looking forward to this evening when you show the full range of what they can do, because you've probably spent more time with than probably anyone in the world, actually.
No, there's a couple of people online that do spend a lot of time with it, maybe too much.
You can't love a guitar too much. Yeah. We've been guilty of that in the past. How about amps? We've set you up with a Hughes & Kettner Grandmeister tonight, but you were saying you use a Tri-Amp?
I use a Tri-Amp. Over the last few years, I've been using Tri-Amp for live. It's just so roadworthy, and so
it's Rush fan.
Yeah. the really cool thing is on the Hughes & Kettner website, there's a photo of me, and next to me is Alex Lifeson, obviously photoshopped, and I'm like a little kid. This is amazing. If 15-year-old me could see me now, actually, I feel 15 years old by looking at that photo. Bloody hell, that's amazing. And but it wasn't because of him, because I started using Hughes & Kettner before him, actually. I think I started using them in 2001 when I played with Natalie Imbruglia. He copied me. So I've been using them for 12 years now. So, but live with Pendulum, because the MIDI capabilities, you can switch channels via MIDI on it. It's got 6 channels.
Yeah, I was reading that you use Guitar Rig for that.
Sometimes that's what I do. Is I run my guitar. It splits. It goes into the Hughes & Kettner amp, so that's in mono, and then we use a Receptor, which is a rack mount computer that runs plugins natively.
It's starting to get into your territory.
I'm leaning into the mic now.
And so to get a more of a synthetic sound, you've got the mono guitar thing that's going bang, and in stereo then either side of it you've got a synthetic plug-in sound, which just makes it sound huge, you know. So
is that because that sort of slightly more compressed sound fits more into the rest of the stuff you're doing, and then you've got the organic stuff going straight through the middle.
But it's mainly, that's only on some of the songs, you know. Mainly it's just the amp, but on some of the songs when you need the synthetic sound, you know, that really helps, you know. It fits in with the synth sounds as well.
What was it that drew you to the Hughes & Kettner stuff?
It's the reliability. Right. First reason I started using it, I wanted a clean channel that went really, really loud.
Yeah.
I wanted a massive clean channel. And Hughes and Kettner do it just brilliantly.
They just don't break up. Yeah, exactly. They don't break up on the clean channel.
Crank that, yeah. And it just... It's so I was using just stomp boxes at the time, so that's all I needed was a clean channel. But then I started using the overdrive. This was a duo tone, was the first amp I started using with them. I was like, God, this overdrive is pretty damn good. So then I got rid of some of the stomp boxes, and now most of my overdrive drive sounds comes from the amp. So it's the odd fuzz box in there that, you know, the amp can't
do. I guess those are doing the kind of weirder stuff that you're not going to get off just Hughes and Kettner drive channel. And how about the Grandmeister?
Yeah, it's brilliant. I think for the next tour I'm going to go it weighs 8 kilos as well.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a lot easier for my tech. I think I'm just going to have a couple of those, and I use TC Electronic as well. I've got a G system,
right?
Which runs everything. That's the brain. That it's got effects loops in it, changes the channels on the amp, and it's bomb proof. Yeah.
Well, let's get into pedals, I guess, because I know that you'll be chomping at the bit to get involved. So the G system is kind of the hub of the rig, and then you've got bits. So what are you running out in the effects loops?
In the effects loops, there's an M9, Line 6 M9.
Hey, which is our favourite pedal.
I was explaining earlier that we pretty much every week now we recommend either the M5 or the M9 to someone who writes in saying, I just want to mess around with effects that you talk about on the podcast. And the M5 is easily the cheapest way of doing that. And the M9 obviously gives you the ability to chain those up.
That's right, yeah. I just use silly... That's just for filter noises.
Yeah.
And silly noises, basically.
Yeah, brilliant. It's great for
this. Yeah, it's fantastic. And I've got an Adrenaline. Do you know?
Oh, yeah, Roger Lynn.
That was made famous by John Mayer. It's got that step phaser effect in it that nothing else really does. What else have I got? I've got the odd fuzz box. I've got the Rotosound, the new fuzz box that they...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they did them in the traditional oversized pedals.
Yeah, it's a bit like the...
I'm not sure I even know about this.
They just released like maybe 5 or 6 of the pedals that Rotosound ran with in...
60s. Well, they did a run of 200, I think, from Rotosound, but they've just done an even more exclusive run, which is built by the guy who built the original ones in his original shed with all the original NOS parts. They're only building like 5.
I think he's a PhD as well, so he's a doctor or something or other. Honestly, this pedal is just... I just love fuzz.
Yeah, yeah.
I love fuzz pedals, and that one... I use Rotosound strings anyway. And I tried that pedal out, and it's brilliant. So over the top. It's great.
That's what you want from a pedal.
We need to get some of those, surely.
Yeah. We've had some of the reissue ones.
Have we?
I'm pretty sure we gave one away. I'm pretty sure there was a competition.
They look
for
so
this.
Cool.
This might have been before I was back.
Maybe. But yeah, they're an awesome pedal.
Yeah.
They're really cool.
I
like things that are kind of built like they... Built like they used to.
It looks like it's come straight from the 60s. You know? But there's so what you can do as well. There's little, I don't know what they're called, little pots.
There's a trim pot. Trim pots
inside that you can just increase the gain. And there's another a parameter in there as well. But you can just crank that thing.
And why wouldn't you?
It's so evil.
Yeah. The thing about I always find with those is they're not like... Like some of those fuzzes that you get that border on like metal distortion, they've kind of got this raspiness, but also like a clarity to them. When they're really loud, they just sing.
I think it's an amazing piece of machinery, and it's over 40 years old. Technology, but it still sounds great.
Yeah,
I think Kendrick's used them.
They're building them out of the original parts. They've found a supplier or something like that.
Yeah, I think they just built a limited run, and then there's these even more exclusive ones that I've read about that apparently are
Yeah, it comes with a certificate, if I remember
really?
Right.
Really? Yeah. Wow.
It looks proper 60s, it's great.
So the board that you've got with you tonight, you're not using the TC stuff. It's mixed it up a little bit. Is that
right? I've still got the polytune there. I'm a big fan of the tone print pedals.
I was going to ask actually just about your kind of relationship with TC, and we spoke a bit about tone print and doing presets and stuff. Yeah. How have you been kind of working with them on those bits?
Tor, who works with the TC, he's the main guy behind the whole tone print pedal. You just asked me one day, well, you told me about him, what was going on. I was going, that's interesting. And then we did a gig in Copenhagen, and he came along with his computer, and I helped program some sounds for him. And so you can get these on the website. And I don't know if you don't, there's an iPhone app that you can transfer the sounds off the website or off the app directly into the pedal.
We've spoken about it a couple of times before, but it is an incredible system. You just hold the phone up to the pickups.
It's mind-blowing. It's so cool. And so you can get my tone prints from there. There's there's a couple of the flashback delay ones, and the vibrato is one of the other ones.
Are you using those pedals out and about?
That's on the other pedal board. I've got a stupid amount of pedals, isn't it? Nuts, but that's on my main little pedal board. I do some gigs with some friends, and they're in that at the moment. So,
how about some of the slightly more obscure stuff that you might be using tonight? I notice you've got one of the Ravish electroharmonics.
Those guys are crazy, aren't they? I just love the, just the silly noises that they make. You know, it's like the things with there's the Ravish sitar and the Pog 2. I mean, you couldn't use those pedals all the time because they just sound so
bonkers.
Yeah. But if you use them in conjunction with other pedals, you know, you can get different sounds, and that's when it starts getting very interesting.
I think that's particularly true of the Pog,
And
you know, the Micro Pog, which is a slightly slimmed down one.
That's right,
when like you say, you wouldn't use it all the time, but pair that up with like a really, you know, vintagey fuzz, and you've got that weird octave up sort of fuzz tone. They're just cool little pedals.
That's in my effects loop for the in the G system as well, the Pog 2. I used that on a couple of songs live, but I think they're just very, very clever.
It seems like not a week goes by when they don't release something new that is just a cool thing. They've just announced, I forget what they've just announced, something new for.
Oh, don't tell me! I mean, I'm gonna have to buy it.
I know.
Is it because they're not cheap? You know, but they're very, very good. They're not cheap. I'm gonna have to. What is it?
So, Matt, you all know actually the new electroharmonic stuff that's on its way. There's some new bits and pieces. I think they've announced.
There's the little Nano Big Muff.
There's a Nano Big Muff.
Oh, really?
Which is just a cool little.
Which is, is apparently the same circuit in the standard US Big Muff, but in a smaller one.
Oh, okay, cool.
Which would be quite cool.
There's nothing in those big ones when you open them up, it's just a cool 70s box.
I have the green Russian one.
Oh, it's the sought after.
I chucked it away.
Oh, really?
What? Yeah.
Blasphemy!
Well, this was about 15 years ago. And the thing just fell apart. All the pots came about. And they weren't that sought after back then.
No, I remember when I started working here.
Cheap rubbish.
Well, I mean, they were kind of seen as a lesser thing because they were, you know, the Russian built ones. When I started here, they were just kind of like, no, don't get that. Get the proper one.
Yeah.
And now they are the one, aren't they? Yeah. Aside from kind of vintage.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I was reading about them the other day, and there's so many. So many.
Yeah, because it just literally fell apart. I put my foot on it, the pots came off, and the pots are rubbish. The pots were the small pots. That just, you know, a couple of
those, because
they
were all the Russian built ones, and it was just like, how can we still make these but under a different name?
But I had the Big Muff, and I had the Small Stone as well. So, and sadly, no longer with me.
Then I was showing you a couple of the second-hand ones you've got.
Have you had a chance to look at any of the new, well, it's not that new, Strymon stuff, new for us, I suppose?
I've never tried a Strymon pedal. Everybody keeps on telling me. This is another thing. It's a good reason, because it's so bloody expensive. You know, I'm just going to, if I play through it, I'm going to love it, and I'm going to have to spend stupid money on it.
Should have bought my pedal board in.
You know.
then, you know, they could have had a meet and greet.
A play date for your pedal.
I like the idea that you kind of plug them in and they talk to each other in sort of binary code.
I think maybe we should move on once we start talking about play dates for pedal boards. I think we've gone too far.
We're talking about gut shots of pedals.
One thing I was going to ask was, after you'd like done some stuff before Pendulum, and you're going to go out and tour it, did you kind of like have to plan your board around like the sounds that were on the record, or had you kind of just plugged load of stuff in and gone, oh, cool?
Well, the sounds on the record, especially the last one, is mainly the Hughes and Kettner. It's pretty straightforward guitar sounds as well. It's just the overdrive from the amp. Yeah. There's a couple of things that did the slightly different. But it was basically the amp sound, that wasn't too bad.
So you kind of just like pick what pedals you fancy.
But on my pedal board, all I've got is the TCG system, a couple of expression pedals for it, a volume pedal, the Polytune, and that's it. It's just basically a control board. I haven't got actually any I use the Buddha Wah, which is just stunning. I love that.
I used to have an original one of those ones before they put them in the big cases.
I've got that's in me little pedal board. The same shape as the Crybaby, purple. I'm using the new one today, which looks like a Cylon from Battlestar Galactica.
They're very chrome.
People can always go, what's that? It's a wah-wah pedal. Wow.
Chaps, looking at the time, I think we should wrap up. I think we'll leave some staff picks till next week. We've got a question that we can do next week as well. But let's go and get set up and make some noise.
We're entering the Gear of the Year time.
Yes, worth mentioning, next week we start Gear of the Year, which is 5 podcasts across the course of the week where we go through the best stuff released this year and fight about which is the best.
I'd like to use this opportunity to point out that I'm not happy about the Gear of the Year setup at all.
Why? Because there's not enough bass.
Well, not enough bass. You get to pick 5 guitars, you get to pick 5 amplifiers, 5 pedals, and then 5 bass things. So I have to lump pedals, bass guitars and amps into one.
5 bass things. So there's a set of 5 string bass strings, really. The B, the E, the D, and the G.
That's all you get. We'll fight about this in the course of the week. We'll have worked something out by next week. Perry, where can people find out about you on the internet? Have you got a Twitter?
It's at PerryGuitar666. I usually talk a lot of shit on Twitter, so that's where I am, talking crap.
The time. Is it guitar-related crap?
Everything, guitars. I'm a big cyclist. I'm a cycling fan as well, so it's usually... I tweet a lot about cycling, and when I tweet about that, a lot of fans get confused, and I lose about 50 every time I tweet about cycling. I don't care.
How about Pendulum? Where are Pendulum at on the internet?
New album coming out next year sometime.
Where can people? What's the website? Where can they?
It's at Pendulum. A couple of guys are still doing DJ sets at the moment.
So okay.
There's DJing all over the world. So they're gigging all the time. So just follow at Pendulum, and come to a club or a festival near you. Anytime now.
Soon.
Yeah.
Well, as always, if you like the podcast, you can always follow us, obviously on the website, gak.co.uk, also on Twitter, @gak_co_uk, or on Facebook, facebook.com/gakmusic, or you can follow me personally on Twitter, @mark_random. Matt, how can people find you?
You can email me, matt.knight@gak.co.uk, for just... general inquiries. But if you want to talk about gear, which I always want to talk about gear, you can tweet me at @matt_knighty. That's Knight with SIE on the end.
Joe Branton, where can people find you?
Yo, if you want to email me, you can on joe.branton@gak.co.uk. Again, for gear-related stuff, you can get hold of me. There's bass-related stuff, actually, which we haven't really had.
To play bass?
Never know. You wouldn't have guessed.
You wouldn't shut up about it. It's crazy.
I've got to get my bit in. This is my one bit.
You've not said Billy Sheehan in this podcast.
Oh, I know. It's been a really quiet podcast for me. Shall I get it in?
Just say Billy Sheehan,
if you want to talk about Billy Sheehan at all, I'll be on Twitter talking about that most of my life, which is at Yosef_900.
Thanks very much, Perry. Thanks for coming down. Big amazing pleasure. To have you on the podcast, and let's go and make some noise.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.
How am I doing? Is that right? I was a bit quiet last week.
Joe, you've got flat hair.
It's because you talk out the side of your mouth.
Flat hair, Joe. That's Joe the problem. Has flat hair.
Podcast.
Podcast. What?
Podcast.
I talk out the side of my mouth.
You do?
No, I'm talking forward. Is that right?
That's much better.
Okay, I'll try and talk like this.
Matt Knight.
Really
hello. Toast. Peanut butter. Toast. That's what Joe has. Peanut butter and toast. Sausage sandwich.